and welcome to Kankakee Podcast, where we talk about the people and places of Kankakee County. I'm Jake Lamore, and our guest on today's episode appeared on the podcast about a year ago, talking about the Strickler Planetarium at Olivet Nazarene University. Now, today he returns to talk about his love for writing and the release of some of his latest nonfiction work in some well-known publications, including Physics Today and others. I'm pleased to welcome back Steve Case to Kankakee Podcast.
All right. Hey, Jake. Thanks for having me again.
I'm glad we can work this out. This is one of the first episodes we've recorded in the new space, so I find that very exciting as well. We were just talking about this before we were recording. It's perfect for what we're about to talk about, which is science fiction. It's
very atmospheric.
Yeah, there's one camera light that's like our beam in this whole room. And then there's just kind of like an array of other lighting equipment and things like that. There's a brick wall, but then there's some drywall. And
yeah, it's also kind of mysterious too.
Yeah, right? Well, with the way the one beam of light, yep. It makes it, yeah. So I
feel... feels a little bit like I'm in interrogation.
Yes, yeah, yeah. No, that would have been if I was shining the light directly in your face and you couldn't see anything at all. But yeah, Steve, great to have you back. When we were on the last time, we were obviously talking about the planetarium and all of that. But now we're actually going to dive into more. We're going to focus on you.
Okay.
And where you're from and how you got here. Obviously, if I remember correctly, you're from Michigan.
That's correct.
Originally.
Yep.
I don't remember if it was... was it Flint or near Flint?
That's correct. Just outside of Flint. Yeah.
Okay.
Most people know Flint, but if people know the Flint area, I'll say Swartz Creek.
Okay. So that's the specific town.
The little town outside of Flint.
Okay. Yep. How many people?
Oh, that's a good question. Swartz Creek is definitely smaller than Kankakee. Okay. Quite a bit. So yeah. It's maybe more of a little village.
And then you ended up coming here to the Kankakee area to go to Olivet.
Yeah, so I came to Olivet as a student way back in 2001. Met my wife here at Olivet. She was studying English education. I was studying science with a minor in writing, because even back then I wanted to do writing. So we were here. We graduated. We were in Mississippi for about 2.5 years for graduate school. I tell people graduate school, the first round of graduate school.
Do you have your doctorate? I can't remember.
I do,
PhD. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I tell people if they don't know what they want to do when they grow up, it's okay, because I didn't figure it out until I went to grad school the second time. So I was in grad school, came back, I think it was 08, the winter of 08, start teaching at Olivet. And I've been here with just a short little break for grad school again ever since.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you ended up coming back.
Well, thank you. We do too. We love it here.
Where did your love for writing come into play? Did you always want to be a writer when you were young, or was it all about science when you were a young age? How did you get exposed to writing?
Honestly, I mean, it sounds a little bit trite to say, but I've been writing pretty much as long as I can remember. I have this memory. I don't know what the schools in Michigan were doing, but I remember like early on, maybe like kindergarten, they would take us down out of our classroom to this lab, right? Like a computer lab.
Yeah.
And this was before you necessarily had a home computer, right? Not everyone had a computer in their home.
And these were ginormous desktop computers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And they had like the old daisy wheel printer.
Oh, yeah.
And it was called the Writing to Read Lab. And I remember that. I remember that name. And basically, they would put us in front of a computer and we could type out stories. And we're pre-literate, right? So we're learning to type and write alongside learning to read. And I guess the idea was that if you did this, if you taught people how to write at the same time as reading, that was good. But I remember like writing stories on this computer. I think my parents still have them printed out somewhere, and you can barely read them because like I can't spell, right? Yeah.
Do you remember what, by chance, one of those first stories was about?
For whatever reason, when I was really little, I remember I always wanted to write scary stories. They were always like ghost stories and stories about monsters. Which is funny because I didn't like being scared. I didn't like, you know, horror or anything like that. But
if you think about it, that's not really far from science fiction and what you have written now.
That's so. True. You're right. I haven't developed very far.
Thanks for pointing that out, Jake.
I hope my spelling's a little bit better.
Yeah, hopefully, right? And more, maybe some bigger words.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, but I've always loved writing. And then just growing up reading, you know, I read C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and remember reading a lot of the classics of science fiction, Asimov and Herbert and Arthur C. Clarke. I remember my dad was a big science fiction fan. And again, when I was really little, I would always find, you know, the paperback science fiction novels sitting around the house. And even before I could read them, they always had the most fascinating covers, right? Like the spaceships or like whatever, you know, a scene on another planet. And I remember thinking, what is in these books that would have such an amazing cover? So growing up reading science fiction and fantasy, you know, growing up watching Star Trek and Star Wars.
So are you a Trekkie or are you a Star Wars or are you both? Yeah. Do you take sides in that matter? Not to get off topic.
No, it's a fair question. I mean, yeah, you're right. If I was forced and if I was answering as a writer, I would definitely say Star Trek.
I knew it. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. All right, forgiven. All right. I think this building at Pathfinder is mainly filled with Star Wars fans.
Star Wars. Okay, well,
I haven't heard anyone talk about Star Trek yet since I've been here, but I could be wrong. I do know that Brian has Darth Maul's lightsaber in his office
We
speak.
Okay.
Yeah, the
big
double-bladed lightsaber.
Well, and to be fair, I haven't kept up with Star Trek. I think I peaked with like Deep Space Nine or Voyager, but as a kid, you know, watching The Next Generation with my dad. And so I always had an interest in writing and really came to school at Olivet. I wanted to be an astronomer or a physicist, but somehow I wanted to marry that with writing. So I took a writing minor. So I was able to take creative writing classes and things like that. And I thought somehow I'd make writing work with being a scientist. Early on, I had a sort of a writing mentor who told me, if you want to be a writer, you should get a job that supports your writing. And I think what he was saying was, it's hard to make a living as a writer. So do something where you can always be writing for fun. And I think I've made that work pretty well.
I would say so, because from what I know about you, Olivet is your job. And then your writing is just, you're having fun.
Having fun, yeah.
With it.
Yeah. And I think I would add to that advice, like ideally, if you can get a job that gives you a lot of opportunities to write, because I do feel like I've been able to find that overlap where kind of to my surprise, I found being an academic, there's a whole lot of writing. It's almost, you know, pretty much every day I'm either working on, not necessarily at work, a science fiction story, but I'm working on maybe a book chapter or review or an article. And I like to think all of that writing that I'm doing for my day job is helping me as a writer all around.
Yeah, I would think so. And that probably goes for almost, doesn't matter what part of education you're in, it all comes back to writing, doesn't it? Whether you're doing science, obviously English, that's a no-brainer, but probably even math too.
Well, I tell my students, sports. Like, you can be the smartest person in the world in your discipline, but if you can't communicate that to other people, and the way you communicate that is writing. So yeah, even if you're like, I'm a math major, what do I need to write for? Like, well, if you want to communicate your findings, if you want to apply for grants, if you want to explain to someone what you do in an email, like you have to be a good writer.
So going forward then from as a kid, you know, discovering Star Trek and Star Wars and those paperback novels, what is, in your opinion, the first short story, because you mainly write short stories.
Primarily,
right? What's the first story that you wrote that you felt like, okay, like this is it?
That's a good question. Yeah. I remember the first short story I ever sold. So maybe that was sort of an indication of, oh, wow, this isn't just something that I think is okay, but this is something that someone's willing to pay money for. So that was back in 2008. I started writing short stories in earnest as an undergrad, and then I started shopping them, like actually looking for magazines that are buying short stories and submitting to editors and things like that. Really was when I was in graduate school the first time. I was a physics major, and I kind of thought, all right, if I'm serious about writing, I need to not just be writing, but I need to be submitting. So I started looking for markets, right? Who's buying fiction, and sort of then starting the process of submitting. And so it wasn't until, I think it was 08, I sold my first story. And I guess that was probably the start.
What was the first story about?
It was basically about sort of like a far future Earth that was sort of so far in the future that technology had devolved. And it was more of like a feudal sort of society and basically a revolution that took place then and sort of spilled out into other planets. It was, the scope was probably far too vast for like an actual short story. But it was my first publication.
Right. I mean, you got to start somewhere,
right,
as it does. Do you find it more challenging to write a short story versus a whole novel? Because I feel like it has to be harder.
To write a novel?
No, to write a short story.
Okay.
I've never like sat down and say, okay, I'm going to write a short story,
sure,
or I'm going to write a novel or what have you. Obviously, I've written songs and things like that.
Right.
But I would just think it's got to be harder to write a short story because you've really got to pack a punch in a short amount of time.
I think that's fair. Yeah. You have a certain amount of space, right? And you have to make it work. And it has to have everything a novel has in the sense of character development and setting and the climax and the resolution. But you're absolutely right. It has to be in a much shorter period of time. That said, for me personally, I have a lot harder time sort of keeping that going for the length of an entire novel, right?
Yeah.
I find, and it might just be the way that I work, I'm sort of writing in the margins of my time. To me, it seems a lot more challenging to write a full novel. I've done it a couple times, but usually what it is it's short stories that are sort of set in the same universe that then kind of congeal into a much larger thing. I've never sat down and said, I'm going to follow this character for 300 pages and it's going to be a novel.
Right. And one of those, well, actually, is it, you're talking about First Fleet? Wasn't that, almost a series though. And then it became...
Yeah. So that had an interesting story. So that was actually originally started as a short story. It was a short story that was published in I think a now defunct magazine. It was kind of a horror sort of science fiction story. And then I was in contact with a friend who worked with a publisher out west, and they were looking to do some e-publishing. They wanted to break into the e-publishing world, and they were looking for writers. And so she connected me with them, and they asked for some of my what I had produced. And I sent them a few stories, and they said, "Oh, we like this story. Can you like spin this out into like a novel?" And what they wanted to do is they wanted to publish it as like a series of, I think, like three novellas. I originally said no, because I was writing my dissertation. I was like, I'm writing my dissertation right now. I can't write a novel at the same time. But they offered me a contract, and I went back and I said, okay, I've got a weekend. I'll put the dissertation aside. I'll just start writing like a sequel to the short story and see where it goes. And it turned out the idea had legs. I was, a few thousand pages later, or not a thousand pages, a few thousand words later.
I mean, it could easily turn into a thousand pages.
A thousand words later, I was like, okay, I think I could do this. And it was a series of three novellas, and then they bundled them all together as a novel, and that's what you can find online.
Outside of the science fiction, you do write nonfiction, mm-hmm, as well, and you are working on one currently, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, I've got a couple projects. So when I'm wearing my academic hat or my nonfiction hat, I'm writing history. I'm writing as a historian, and I specifically do history of science, and then I focus on history of astronomy. So I do have a book with the University of Pittsburgh Press that's about the history of astronomy, Making Stars Physical. It's about how we went from seeing the stars as, shiny objects in the sky to things that we could measure and weigh and find the distances to. So I'm looking at the 19th century. And central to that story is a guy named John Herschel, who I tell people was basically the Stephen Hawking of Victorian England. And so right now I'm working on a biography of John Herschel for an academic press. And as part of that, I published, it's out this month, it's the issue of Physics Today this month, has a feature article on John Herschel and why he's a big, important guy for the history of physics.
So why is he so important for physics?
Yeah, he was sort of right there at the beginning of science becoming modern. He was at the center of the scientific community. His father is who most people have heard of, the astronomer William Herschel. He discovered the planet Uranus. But John Herschel had a much more broad career. He's one of the founding fathers of photography. He coined the term snapshot and negative. And he really kind of defined what it meant to be scientific in the Victorian era, which I argue is sort of when science is kind of becoming the recognizable discipline that it is today.
It's finally like, hey, these guys aren't crazy after all.
Right. Yeah. Maybe this stuff is important.
Maybe what they're saying makes sense.
Right. And the term scientist actually came into being during his lifetime. Right before this, you were a natural philosopher. By the end of his life, you're a scientist. So yeah, I spent a lot of time, my kids make fun of me because I spent a lot of time thinking and talking about John Herschel.
And you probably end up doing that in your classes that you teach as well, right?
I try to work them in as much as possible. Yeah. Like, Dr. Case, we don't care about John Herschel. Let's just talk about astronomy.
Well, let's focus in on the three, I should say, sure, publications that are just coming out between June, July, and August of 2023, the short stories that you have. I guess, sure, you just kind of touched on Herschel, John Herschel's, and that is actually out in June. Do you have an exact date on that?
It's out now.
It's out now. Yep, okay.
The issue of Physics Today. So if you're a physics nerd, you're excited about this, but I'm not sure where you go to get your hands on a copy of Physics Today. Yeah. You know, most physicists in the US get a copy in their mailbox because of the professional organizations that they're,
yeah,
in. But I don't think you can walk down to Barnes & Noble and grab it off the shelf.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. But yeah, obviously they can look that up online. And I'll have links in the description,
sure,
to all of these as well. Let's talk about Daughters of Lattice.
So this is, Daughters of the Lattice is a short story that is going to appear in the July-August issue of Asimov Science Fiction. So I'm pretty excited about this. Again, if you're a physics nerd, maybe you're excited about Physics Today. If you're a sci-fi nerd, you're definitely excited about Asimov's science fiction. It is one of the few remaining print sci-fi magazines that has national distribution. You can walk into Barnes & Noble and get a copy of the latest issue of Asimov's.
That's so cool.
And so it's a market I'm pretty excited to be appearing in. This is a short story that I wrote. It's been a while, but it's about, I tell people it's my Nuns in Space story. I've always been...
I love where this is going. Nuns, okay, in space. This is great.
I've always been fascinated by sort of religious orders, right? The idea that you would commit your life to a sort of a religious vocation, right? And what that would look like.
Like a Jedi.
Like a Jedi, right. Or a Jesuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this idea, I mean, you sometimes see it appear in science fiction, right? There's a lot of religion in Frank Herbert's Dune, for instance. There's a fantastic science fiction novel called The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell. It's about the first Jesuit mission to another planet. But I wanted to basically take the idea of sort of galaxy-spanning epic science fiction and sort of populate a galaxy-spanning empire like you might see in Star Wars with religious figures, right? So
you're just taking out Jedis and
putting
nuns.
In nuns. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And it worked. They bought it.
So what are these nuns are, is the whole idea to...
Like proselytize? Minister?
Yeah, like a missionary. Mm-hmm. Like, is that it's their mission to spread the word of their religion? Does it get into that? No.
No. And so in this future, you're sort of doing more of what the medieval monastics would be doing in the sense of like bringing civilization. And obviously there's good and bad connotations with that. But like functioning not just as missionaries, but as sometimes the army of the empire, sometimes maybe the medical and carrying the knowledge of sort of the empire. But really the setting of it is what happens when you have this galaxy spanning empire and it falls apart. So the story follows this particular sort of cathedral ship of nuns that's marooned. They've lost their, you know, light year spanning technology. And what happens when you have, sort of your religious vocation that doesn't really make sense anymore because you're never in a million years going to get back to the planet where you started on. How do you build a new life on a marginally habitable world? So imagine a cathedral ship full of nuns that ends up on Hoth, right? If we're going with the Star Wars analogy. So that's in a nutshell sort of what's going on in that story.
I'm definitely going to have to read that one.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
No, I'm intrigued, especially since I grew up Catholic. I'm like, nuns on a spaceship? Like, this is great. I'm going to learn about that. So that comes out in July.
And I'm not sure if it's actually in July or if it comes out like a little bit, like maybe just in a couple of weeks, midway through June. But I'm basically like, I'm checking their website because I still want to see the cover reveal, right? What's the cover of the magazine going to be like? And I'm quite excited. So,
yeah. And then the next one is Every Seed is a Prayer and Your World is a Seed. Mm. And that'll be in Clark's World magazine. You don't have an exact date on that one yet?
Yeah, I just signed the contract on that one, so I don't know what their timeline is for publication. Clark's World is an online magazine. It's been in the news a lot lately. When ChatGPT came out, I guess it was on a list somewhere that maybe a YouTuber had of, hey, here's a sci-fi market that pays pretty well for stories. Why don't you use ChatGPT and try to make a quick buck? And so I think there was an NPR article where they actually were sort of just flooded with AI-generated submissions and had to take their, you know, submission server offline for a little while. And it turns out most magazines really want stories written by people.
They do?
They do.
No.
And it turns out that most AI-generated fiction is not very good.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? And ironically, the story that I sold Clark's World, which is a science fiction magazine, so it's not that unusual, is about AI.
Of course. Right. So what's the storyline with AI in the short story?
Right. So this one is definitely not set in the far future. It definitely doesn't have any nuns in it. This one is sort of in the near future. And the idea is, okay, we have climate change. One thing that would really mitigate this is planting more trees, having more forests, capturing more carbon. What if we handed forest management, forestry over to an AI algorithm that could basically, like it's finding, you know, efficient ways to do computing, could find really efficient ways to grow our forests? And so it's following a couple characters that are sort of at a forest station, kind of monitoring this and what invariably goes wrong.
Man, that's deep. Using AI to figure out where to plant trees.
Right. And how to grow them. And so they're capturing light most effectively. And, you know, there's some genetic modification that gets involved.
AI technology is really kind of, it's here, you know, like, and it's not going anywhere.
And it's making us ask some really, I think, valuable and really important questions. We talked about ChatGPT a lot. I taught a course this semester in science and society. And the final assignment, I had the students generate an essay using ChatGPT and then critique it so they could learn, okay, how does this really work? What can it do? What can it not do? And it was a lot of fun. There's a fascinating conversation there.
What's your take on AI?
Yeah, so I have the most experience thinking and sort of researching and spending time with like text generative AI. And frankly, if it comes to like writing with AI, I think it really forces us to ask, what is our literature for? Because if you just want to read a story to be entertained, the time is not very far off where you can say, hey, Alexa, write me a story that's like Harry Potter, but has this, this, and this, and it'll generate you a novel, right? That's coming. But if literature is about connecting with other people, like with other human minds, if it's like having a shared sort of culture and context and experience, then I think we should really resist AI generated text in our publication systems. That's kind of my nutshell thought.
I wonder what an AI movie would look like.
You know, I don't know.
Like you just said the example of, hey, Alexa, write me a story that's like Harry Potter, but I wonder if you could do that with a TV show.
Well, with some of the, and I don't know as much about the image generating AI, but I mean, I think it's coming. I will not be surprised in the next couple of years if there is a best-selling novel that only later the publishers will say, oh, by the way, that was AI. Which then raises issues about consent and disclosure that I think we should be talking about right now with AI.
Yeah, that brings in a whole nother legal matter into it, right?
Yeah.
I can't even wrap my mind around that. So we'll have links in the description to these. And then is there anything else that you're currently working on or anything else about your writing you want to...
Yeah. So again, wearing my nonfiction hat, there's more John Herschel on the way. I'm working with a colleague and we are editing or co-editing the Cambridge Companion to John Herschel for Cambridge University Press. So that will be out hopefully before too long. And that has scholars all over the world, each writing a chapter on the different sort of aspects of John Herschel's career, John Herschel in astronomy, John Herschel in photography. As far as fiction goes, I'm always sort of playing around with stories and drafts of stories. I really like my universe with the nuns and that sort of galaxy spanning
so
empire.
You might,
so I might be back there a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So. I'm totally for that. So if you want to view all of Steve's short stories, they're on his website. He's got the links to all of them. And that's pretty much how it works, right? You sell them the story mm-hmm. and it has to stay on their website or if it's a physical copy or both.
Usually what you're selling is you're selling first publication rights. And usually those are exclusive for anywhere to 6 months to a year. So what that means is they have the right to host it on their site forever. But, you know, 6 months, a year later, you could sell it as a reprint, although there are fewer markets that are interested mm-hmm. in reprints.
Right.
What I did do, and you'll see on my website, you're right. You can find links to most of my recent stories. Some of the older ones are a little bit more obscure, harder to find. Maybe the magazines aren't around anymore. I did sort of bundle all of those into a collection that you can purchase on Amazon. So that's there on the website as well.
As the internet age continued, some didn't survive.
That's right.
So that's StephenRCase.com for that. It's spelled with a PH, just mm-hmm. so you know, it's not V-E-N, it's P-H. And the link to your Amazon is there. Anything else?
Yeah, I'll just put a plug in for the wider sort of Kankakee literary scene.
Oh, that's right. So what is the literary scene like? It seems like now more than ever, I didn't realize there were so many authors in Kankakee.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of them. One of the more well-known, James Riordan.
He has
a fantastic sort of backlog of works that he's done. A lot of nonfiction, a history of music. You're probably familiar.
Oh yeah, he's a legend around here.
Yeah, there are lots of a good place to start is walk right around the corner to Rubber Rose Books. She does a great job. Really well curated. Selection of local authors and their works there.
Oh, shout out to Nikki.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people realize it, but one of our aldermen, Dave Barron, has written a really cool, again, kind of in the nonfiction world, a fantastic book actually on Pembroke. Yep. I don't know how you get your hands on that, but...
I'm not sure either, but I know that he's written that. I haven't actually read it yet myself.
It's great about, you know, sort of like learning some of the history of what's here in our own backyard. So yeah, and then there are fantasy and science fiction, C.J. Rose, Sarah Falk, Gregory Thompson.
I just met Gregory the other day.
Yeah, he's got some really neat work out there.
Yeah, his talking about front covers that capture your attention.
Yes.
His captured my attention, and I ended up buying three of his books at the Strawberry Jazz Festival. So it had me very intrigued. The storylines, I was like, really? Like, okay, I'm going to have to buy this and read it because that's very fascinating.
I think there's lots of cool ways to support local authors, and those are some of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even sometimes Moon Cookie Gallery has local author books on sale as well. But yeah, Rubber Rose for sure to get those local books. I mean, you're supporting a local store mm-hmm. and also supporting a local author. So
she's got a great selection. I mean, besides the local artists, every time I walk in, I feel like I find something on her shelves. I'm like, yeah, I need to go home with this book.
Well, Steve, this has been great.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. And obviously any questions that people have about Steve's writings or even anything related to science at Olivet, they can...
Absolutely.
Shout out to you or hook up with you there as well.
Sounds great. This river carries on.